I want to talk to you about some material today. Working out some material on the tone scale, so I thought I'd talk to you about the tone scale today. Enough new material on this to warrant a lecture on the subject. The first tone scale appears in Dianetics, Mind Science, and Mental Health, Book 1, and is the first chart in that book. You might not recognize this entirely as a tone scale, yet it is the graph of survival, and that is the bottom start, the fundamental on the tone scale itself. Now, it's quite interesting, tremendously interesting, that the tone scale has stepped out from being a survival tone scale. Yeah, that's the most interesting thing, and one of the first things that I should mention to you in case it's missed. The tone scale from 2.0 north to 40 is a survival scale. From 2.0 south to minus, we do not know how far, but which we say, just to be handy about it, we know a point which exists at minus 8, so we say minus 8, we know that point, is a chart of non-survival. So that you would get your basic tone scale, starting in really at 2.0 north for survival, and then survival is so unapparent, so very difficult to distinguish or discover from 2.0 down, that we would have to call that a chart of succumb. That is a succumb chart. From minus 8 to 2.0, there's less and less succumb, and from 2.0 on up, there's more and more survive. Now, actually, there is some survive right on down to 0 on the tone scale. 0, by the way, is above minus 8, but there is some survival from 0 up, because that is body death. As long as something is still existing, we could say there is some factor or function of survival connected with it. It still has something in there that's saying, let's all survive. But when the purpose of the general organism and all of the factors adds up to succumb, and when these factors add up to a stronger factor than survival, we must then assume that the body is trying to succumb. And the point where survival factors are overweighed by succumb factors is 2.0. From there on down, the succumb factors are far more present. The repression factors, the pressure against survival, you might say, are far more apparent than the survival factors. And so we, of course, have to say that that is the succumb part of the chart. Now, this is an arbitrary thing, this tone scale. It's very arbitrary. It was worked out empirically and was based on a series of discoveries, which were all empirically arrived at. The first actual tone scale, when one thought of it as a tone scale, was derived from the behavior of an engram. If you start erasing an engram over and over, you'll find the person more or less starts in at apathy, and then from apathy we find a progression through to grief when we bring him up a little bit higher and he's a little bit less upset about existence while he's in fear. And when he's a little bit better off, why, he gets angry. And when he is pretty well off, why, he is antagonistic. Now, there's great oddity about this tone scale, is that right at that point there of antagonism, we get outflow, and from that point of outflow, antagonism, down, we get inflow. So we could say the organism was inflowing or being flowed in upon from 2.0 down and was to some degree, greater and greater degree, outflowing from 2.0 up. It's an interesting thing that this developed out of just the observation of pre-clears. It did, day after day, develop. Just observation. And was soon very apparent that the various emotions were arranged in this category. After a while, another shorthand tone scale was developed, and that was thought, emotion, and effort. It was understood that effort was below emotion, and that thought was above emotion. And then a wider scale developed, which was called the no to mystery scale. And that was started at the top, no, and went on down through to mystery. And it's an oddity that this no to mystery scale should continue to exist while we still had a tone scale in existence. Why should we have these two scales? Well, it's because they're evidently at right angles to each other. They are not parallel scales. So the tone scale went on and was used very successfully. It was fairly well understood by auditors that if you process somebody who was in apathy, he would get into grief. And if you process somebody who was in grief and you raised his tone, why, he would get into fear. And if you process somebody who was in fear and raised his tone, he'd become angry. And covert hostility is just one tiny step above fear. And he would become angry. If we raised the tone level of an angry man, he would become antagonistic, and then he would become bored. We raised the tone level of somebody who was bored, he would probably become first conservative and then enthusiastic about existence. Well, that's actually a lot to know right there. That's quite a bit to know, because if you might say, break the dramatization. You know, you break the dramatization of somebody who is afraid, and you say, oh, no, there's nothing to be afraid of. You really haven't anything wrong. There's nothing going on. There's nothing to be upset about. You are merely exaggerating the whole thing. He'll start to cry after a while. Well, have we made him better or worse? We've made him worse. Now, if we take an angry man, and we give him a sudden jolt or a kickback, something like that, he's liable to drop down scale. If we take somebody who was angry and we counter his anger in some fashion so as to quell it and crush it, he will then go down scale. He'll go through fear and so on down. A person who is having a very rough time on the anger band, which is 1.5, just below 2.0, who is having a very hard time on that, cracks up rather fast, because here is really the tremendous stop on outflow, inflow. So we say 2.0, but it's at 1.5 where we get inflow and outflow locked. We go a tiny bit above that and the fellow outflows. We go a tiny bit below that and the fellow inflows. And these are the characteristics of anger. He's in a stuck point. People who are angry a lot of the time rather develop solid ridges and so forth. Well, all of this is a chart of interpretation of human behavior and reaction. And as such a chart, it is quite useful, not just to the auditor, but quite useful to a person in the business of living. He sees somebody, and this person is talking, they're saying, well, you know, really, it's all pretty bad, and everything is going to go to the devil, and they're all after you, and he starts talking along this line. We know we're probably talking to somebody at about 1-1 or 1. He's probably pretending to be a little sympathetic toward us, but he's trying to frighten us one way or the other. Well, he's using his dramatization to pass along the contagion, you might say. So we know that as this individual works along that line, he must have additional characteristics. And the Science of Survival chart of human evaluation tells us the additional characteristics for these tone scale points on the emotional band. They're very interesting. The only error we've ever made with the chart of human evaluation in Science of Survival is not to believe it. And we have occasionally erred on this. We say, all right, this fellow goes around, he spreads a lot of N-theta, and he's upset about things and so forth, but his temporary condition will go in, and all of a sudden somebody pulls the curtain up on something else he is doing, and we find all the other buttons on the chart. Well, these are not nice buttons at 1-1. They're very interestingly vicious buttons. But they have one thing in common, and that is a degree of succumb greater than the degree of survival along all dynamics. Now, the dynamics from 1 to 8 simply subdivide existence in such a way that it can be studied segmentally. instead of just a confusing whole. And the individual at 1.1 is on a succumb bent. He has more succumb in his nature than he has survive in his nature, and we get to a study of that part of the communication formula which we've never really stressed, and that is intention. What is the intention of the individual? The intention of the individual in this particular case is to succumb. And that means to succumb along all dynamics. So that means that he wants to succumb sexually, the group he's attached to, he wants that to succumb, the race, the animals around him, the machinery, the mess with which he's surrounded, any spirit he might come into contact with, and God too. He wants all these things to succumb. He thinks this is the best thing to do. We see an example of this in Schopenhauer's Will and an Idea. Schopenhauer was a wonderful example of a one, I guess he's about 1.3. He flutters between 1.5 and 1.1. And he came to the vast conclusion, which was undoubtedly a very fine conclusion for Schopenhauer, that in view of the fact that you could not possibly survive, then the best thing to do would be to put an end to all life. Now, at 1.1, they would say, well, all life probably will come to a bad end, you know. At apathy, they would say, well, just leave it alone, it'll all collapse. Schopenhauer's a little higher tone than that. He said the best thing to do was to put an end to it, to keep this stream of protoplasm from going on down through the halls of time. And he thought that was the finest idea in the world. He thought that was gorgeous. And he wrote a whole book about it. That is not apparent as you wade through his philosophic verbiage, but all of a sudden you find out where he's going, and he proves to you conclusively that this is true because the female spider eats its mate. I think that's one of his points. I've forgotten, but this is a conclusive proof. Now, to us in Scientology, we recognize this as a very simple manifestation. Spiders are below 2.0. Now, there's something else that is fantastic in the entire tone scale, which you really should know, is that there is no absolute point of non-survival on the entire scale. There is a point of non-survival for a form as such. John Jones can die and cease to exist as John Jones, a form. But the funny part of it is that the creator of the form, the planning back of the form, the spirit which guided the form, all goes on living. That the genetic line is not an unending stream of protoplasms, they'd have you believe in cytology, but is a sort of a bridge which is utilized by what we call a genetic entity in order to construct the form again. In other words, the form dies here, and he goes, you might say, up the track a little bit in the future, and he builds another form. And that lives for a while, and he figures out some various ramifications and modifications for this form to make it survive better, and skips on up the track again, and as soon as it dies, and builds another form. It's an interesting thing. It's a sort of a hit-or-miss proposition, but there is active planning going on in that. You aren't looking at a sexual, unending stream of protoplasm when you're looking at the genetic line. This was Darwin's primary error, and it was an error. He believed, sort of, that everything was connected under a natural selection, no direction basis. Darwin had been a better actuarial man. If he'd been better with his mathematics, he would have realized that the odds are in favor of natural selection. Are tremendously overweighed by the odds against it. In other words, there aren't this many random chances. The natural selection as a theory, if you know it, is not particularly workable. It's not workable from a mathematical standpoint. There aren't that many random chances. There must be some sentient direction going into the planning and execution of bodies and life forms. Now, if this is true, then biology should alert to something. It has never really been very successful when it regarded life as and sex as this unending line of protoplasm. It's never been very successful to this degree. It's not a scientific science. It calls itself a science, but it contradicts itself quite often. And cytology, which is the mother science of biology, contradicts cytology very rapidly, and cytology is contradicted by biology. You shouldn't have this much argument if you have a science. And there is quite an argument there. All right, if there is some planning present, what is doing the planning? Well, that thing which is doing the planning is evidently a thinkingness, not very thinkingness, which is going on a reactive line, sort of learning by experience, applying its experience to the thing and carrying out a basic plan, and it utilizes the already gathered riches, materials, and organic matters of life in order to build new life. It's an interactive mechanism, quite expertly planning and executing. If you ever looked at the anatomy of a human ear, you would wonder how on earth anything could possibly sit down and build a human ear. Sculptors sit around and try to build a human ear, and they have a hard time doing it, making one that looks just exactly live and so forth. Well, I call to your attention that a life form doesn't have any difficulty in making a human ear look alive. Just look at the ears around you, you find out they all look alive. Well, now that's a pretty good trick. So there is something there with a activity going on, and we get at the tone scale, 0.0, we get the death of the organism. But this does not mean the death of that which builds the organism. See, this thing will skip completely independent, really, of the sexual act. It just utilizes the sexual act to pick up materials already created, you see, and it'll just do a skip from death into life again and go on from the, you might say, the conception forward, and builds a body in the womb and then builds it outside the womb, lets it get 21 and drafts it. now, everywhere we look, we are able to discover that a finite identity is all that can die. We can say Rome is dead. Yet actually, how dead is Rome? We still know about Rome, so just in memory it is not quite dead. But more pertinent than that, you take a lot of the genetic entities, you put them on a lie detector, an E-meter, an O-meter now that we're building, and you put them on this and study them a little bit, and you ask them whether or not they ever been in Rome and so forth, and you start to find out some of the darndest things. You find out that we have amongst those present the people who made Rome, and if Rome was masonry, we don't have any Rome left. But if Rome was life, then we have all the experience of Rome available to us, and furthermore, the people who built the people of Rome are still building people. Now, there's no, this is an oddity, which is simply demonstrable from the research with lie detectors and so forth, with observation of facsimiles, engrams, and behavior of organisms. You can actually trace their past and history if you go at it scientifically, not psychologically. The main difficulty that we encounter then is trying to find some point of absolute non-survival, absolute succumb. Well, we already found that there was no such thing as an absolute survival point. No such thing. Something didn't suddenly reach a point and say, well, now from here on out it is absolute survival. Nothing reached this point. That absolute was unobtainable for the excellent reason that life goes on and it changes and makes other forms, and some forms do and some forms don't. You would have to get something surviving either as a form or as a spirit perpetually and forever to the end of eternity in order to have a survival mechanism. Now, this is quite cute because we have not reached the end of eternity. And not having reached an end of eternity, we then discover quite interestingly, that we have not yet had an absolute survival. And the definition of eternity is, of course, unendingness, so we will never have a definition of absolute survival. We'll have a definition, we'll never see absolute survival. So the Dawn scale went up originally to 4, and then we recognized some more factors about survival, and I plotted the thing further, found some more factors and plotted further. It went to 40, even in science of survival makes allowance for 1,000 arbitrary units of survival, and probably goes on north from there, an unending height. Similarly with succumb. How dead can you get? Nobody knows. Nobody has any idea how dead you can get. That's one of the frightening things about life, that it doesn't have an unlimited survival. There is no way you can make a magic sign up here and say, all right, from here on out, being a Wamsamuta or something of the sort, I will now survive in this optimum condition. And I will survive till the end of eternity in this condition. It doesn't seems to be theoretical. I can state it, but it doesn't seem to be feasible. Now let's look at the other end of it, and no one can say, well, now I am dead. He can say it, but someday he is busy, he's a little child and he's walking through a field, something of the sort, and he feels very queasy. He has a feeling he's been here before. And he has a feeling that situation is not quite optimum. And he gets very frightened and goes back, and his mother not is, is the thing. And says, well, now, dear, there's nothing for you to be worried about. Well, he might have a body buried in the middle of that field. See? He's quite upset. You won't get him to go near that field after that. Something about that field upsets him, and he cannot tell you what or why or how. But this is a Thetan, a spirit, who has already picked up one body, which has been picking up the protoplasmic line. Then we have this other rack of guiding spirits, but the individual who picks up these bodies along the line carries them on. This is a fundamentals on which we operate in processing. But that these fundamentals are true is demonstrable in the fact that for the first time in the history of man, we can heighten, change, alter personality and IQ. Fantastic, but we can. So there must be something to what we have found out. I call to your attention that nobody else has been able to change IQ beyond simply hitting somebody over the head with a hammer and saying, you're stupid. I imagine after a while, the fellow would have the idea he was stupid. Now, you can change it downward, but we can change it upward. And we change it upward simply by using the very principles which I'm discussing with you today. Here's your protoplasm line. It has all the materials available to build a body, but here is something we call a genetic entity of no size in no particular position, which takes that protoplasm line and guides it forward in growth. And then along about birth, we have a spirit, and he sails in from some place or another just having made a mess out of the whole works in Los Angeles or something of the sort. He's not even on the same protoplasm line or the same GE line. He just comes over and he says, what a nice little girl, bang, and that's that. And we carry the little girl on from there. Well, recognizing these separate parts makes it possible then for the individual to be processed in a direction which heightens his various abilities and perceptivities. And when we do this, we are bringing him up tone scale. This is an interesting thing. That's all we're doing with him. Now, here, then, we take the woof and warp of the anatomy, you might say, of this thing called the body and this thing called the mind, and working together with them, why we get them either to work better or work apart. It doesn't matter which. But we are still fighting with the tone scale. Let's say the body is at body's in good condition for this society. It's about 2.0, pretty good condition. If you kicked it, it'd possibly flinch back, kick back at you a little bit. Something on this order, it's not in bad condition. The person who is controlling this body may be at 4.0. He's quite enthusiastic, but he is a being who is the being that you're processing. As long as we process the body, we're not processing the guy. So he has this body, and he's at 4.0, and his task is to discover some method or another of getting this body into a state where it can accept an enthusiastic direction. That's his task, and that's what he's confronted with. So we get other factors involved. We get his intention in this communication with the body, and his intention is quite important. Also, the body's intention here would be quite important too, wouldn't it? The body's intention would be no change. And the Thetan's intention would be change. Now we get an entirely different situation where we have a body which is at maybe 3.0, a body which almost never get above 3.0, and a conservative sort of an outlook, you know. I don't go running and jumping into fires sort of an outlook. I sit here quietly and watch the firemen. And when I get big, if I'm well trained so I won't get hurt, maybe I will become a fireman too. Conservative attitude, 3.0. And we have a Thetan, a being in charge of this, who just went through an awful life back in the things he learned. These things were quite interesting to him at the time he was learning them, but now he wants to forget them all, and he's gotten himself into a sad state, and he's just been released from a sanitarium or something of the sort, and he is at minus 6.0. Well, now the body is set with the proposition of trying to change the Thetan if anybody's going to come out of it. Here, see this. Well, wherever we look, we find that there are two positions on the tone scale. We learned this in 1952. You plot a fellow on the tone scale, and we say, well, that's the way he is, and then all of a sudden we notice that he doesn't plot quite the way he was. And we can plot him always on two positions of the scale. Well, one of the reasons why we weren't able to plot people on the scale is we didn't have the entire and complete scale. We didn't have the southern scale. We couldn't go far enough south to find out what the Thetan was doing. Now, Thetan is very often below body death. In other words, a spirit can be alive when a body would be dead. Now, all religion is based more or less on this. Man has believed this for ages and ages and ages. A man could be alive when a body was dead. Well, he wouldn't necessarily have to be way down tone from body death in order to survive the body, but most often right after death, the spirit is. He goes down tone in a hurry, and he starts hitting down around minus 4.0 or something like that, saying, oh, I failed again. I'm all degraded. I want to forget the whole works. Just wipe it out. No further responsibility. The devil with it. And I don't even think I'll go find a new body. It's no use. And he may sit around, actually, for generations, this sort of in a decadent state of horrible decay, saying, well, if I sit here long enough, maybe I'll perish. And he finally gets bored sitting there waiting to perish and comes up tone scale and comes up maybe to apathy or something of the sort and says, oh, well, let's see who's so may go and pick up another darn thing so I have another better run at it this time. So he does. So we get these hitherto inexplicable dualities of human nature. The tone scale, as I said, is no exception to this. We look at the scale and we discover right straight across the scale that a person seems to plot with the greatest of logic. He just plots very nicely right straight across the scale. And if we take the whole scale and then plot him very, very searchingly, we'll find out we're probably plotting something else too. In other words, we're plotting two levels of the scale simultaneously. One of these is the body, the other one is the Thetan. The question is which? Well, only processing could tell you which one was which. After you've brought somebody 3 feet back of his head and all of a sudden his comm lag is awfully long, you know, we've exteriorized him. We exteriorized him with certainty. And all of a sudden he's saying, huh? Well, the Thetan was lower on the scale than the body. And we exteriorize him, and all of a sudden he starts to talk rapidly and so on. He's outside now, and he's talking with great rapidity, and so on. We can say that the body was the lower scale. But until that happened, we would never really be sure because we've got a mixture of the two. Well, as we look this over, we find that this is a very, the whole scale itself is a very handy guide to tell the auditor what he's going to run into. It will predict and is a scale of prediction. And a very short time ago became a scale of processes. The interesting thing about it was is we had a right angle scale we weren't paying any attention to. Now, this is in no final state, you understand. It's not the ne plus ultra of the scale. But we have enough new things on the scale, I'd better do something about it. Here, let's just take this scale just as such here. And we'll mark this as -8, and that is hide. Now, there isn't any real reason to go on and put the numbers on these, because it's really a sequence rather than a series of arbitrary numbers. We keep the arbitrary numbers to keep people in communication on the subject. The numbers often serve in lieu of the word. We say somebody was 1-5-ing around, or somebody was a 1-5. Another Scientologist knows immediately what we're talking about without saying, well, he was a very angry man, spun in and stuck at the point 1-5 upon the tone scale in the chart of human evaluation. So right above this, we have protect. All these things do have in values, numerical values, by the way. And right above protect, we have ownership. And right above ownership, we have responsibility. And right above responsibility, we have control. There's an interesting thing, because each one of these things is subdivisible. There's tiny gradients inside each one of these. Quite fascinating. Now we get up here, and we run into, there are probably others on this same band, but we run into here 0.0, which is body death. Now, when somebody is at 0.0 as a thetan, he will try to make the body hit 0.0. And we get somebody with a severe psychosomatic illness. He's trying to kill the body any way he possibly can. Or we get a body which is stuck in an old death and is trying to die, or believes it's dead, and it's stuck there. And it's using illness with which to accomplish this death. But actually, that's a mechanism which goes all the way up and down here. All right, now the oddity is that right here we have effort. Just above body death. The whole band of effort sticks in here. But in the view of the fact it sticks someplace else too, we won't have to pay too much attention to that, and we will put down the rest of the scale here, which is apathy and grief, fear, which is 1.0. Grief, there's some argument about its value. It's usually written as 0.5. It might be 0.75. And then, because it's really a ridge, it's half of anger. So here is 1.5, which is anger, 2.0, which is the first outflow of the individual, is antagonism. Now, there isn't any outflow to amount to anything below that point. I'll get this real solidly. None of these are outflows. Control, responsibility, ownership, protect, hide, these are not outflows. They're checks and balances of one kind or another. They're rigidities, they're plays and counterplays. An individual has to be way up here in order to use a postulate to accomplish control. And control is usually done by effort. All right. Now, he doesn't like to use effort either, so he hides it from himself. Now we have 2.5, boredom. That's an interesting thing, that many a case will be run until, oh, I'm tired of that process, can't we go on to something else? Well, you've got him just in an artificial emotion called boredom. It's a sort of an eddying, a sort of a New Yorker type of attitude. And this 2.5 is simply en route to 3.0. And if we run him a little bit further, oddly enough, we will actually get him into conservatism
and then up above this at 4.0, which is about as high as the body can go, we have enthusiasm. Just as a body is circumscribed by climate, by air, it can only go so high, it can only go so far down, it can only be so hot and so cold and still survive, so is the body circumscribed on this tone scale as having a very narrow band of existence. It can only tolerate certain real emotions. And any other thing has a tendency to drag it down. Now, if you understand this, then you know all about control, responsibility, ownership, protection, and time. I'll go over that again. The body tolerance is from 4.0 to 0.0. And when we bring in control, responsibility, ownership, protect, and hide, we decrease its survival. We say that it isn't a good thing for a spirit to be in connection with a body, which is at this low on the band, which is below postulating things that may occur. At the same time, it isn't good for a body to be under the heavy control of a spirit, because the spirit is controlling it. We'd say this is then a non-optimum circumstance. That's right. It's a non-optimum circumstance. And that's why bodies do die. And in that lies the most general explanation possible, I think, at this time, of death. The aging of bodies, geriatrics, the answer to the whole science of aging, which is science of geriatrics, does lie in this scheme right here. A body is being controlled. Other responsibility is being taken for it than its own. It is being owned, it's being protected, and it's being hidden. And it causes the body to decay in one lifetime. That's an oddity. It decays in one lifetime. There isn't any reason why it should decay. There's no reason why a body should age. I mean, it's foreign to the actual plan of bodies. They're supposed to go along, put themselves in pretty good shape. And then they start to age, and this worries a body, worries the Thetan, because it seems to be an unnatural and unwanted condition. And aging really is not a deterioration down into death. You don't look at it that way. It's a deterioration to disability. See, it's an entirely different thing than just dying. There's many a fellow could say, if I just die, I'd be all right, but I'm not. I'm aging. And the super control and ownership and so on of the body does bring about this condition. Now, it isn't that you should don't draw the conclusion out of this. You should just suddenly turn the body loose, and that would be that, and everything would be happy, because then there wouldn't be any game, and you would have no purpose for having bodies in the first place. Where you have a game, you have limitations. Where you have limitations, you have liabilities. A game cannot be played without sides and limitations. There must be restrictions to play a game. So there would just be nothing to do at all right now, unless there might be other games, but there's no choice between a game and no game. There is no such choice. All right. No choice between a game and no game. Any game's better than no game, according to any Thetan. He paints himself up the most dolorous, upsetting, horrible materials as to the terrible liabilities of losing the game. That's because there is no penalty for losing. So he even has to invent a penalty for losing. Neither is there a reward for winning, so he has to invent rewards for winning. And out of this, why, we get something that's playable. But usually he's most likely is apt to go downscale and walk around and say, oh, how horrible it all is, how horrible it all is, just to tell people, I'm losing, I'm losing. He's a symbol, which means losing. So you might say loss is entering any place from 4.0 down. Not succumb, but loss. The individual is experiencing loss. Now, this is an easily demonstrated fact.
terribly easily demonstrated. Fantastic. You can run a process. Give me something you could give everything you have to. All of a sudden, the fellow realizes that there are darn few all-out efforts anywhere in this universe. He get unhappy about it. And after a while, he'll find out there are some. He'll dream up some or invent some. And after that, he'll get very, very happy about it. He's trying to give his body to things. He's trying to give his all to things. And after he finds out that he has reservations, he feels he probably shouldn't forward everything he has, you know, put all your eggs in one basket, expend all the ammunition, burn all the gas, you know, he should save some. Then he gets into trouble. Above this point, he does not save, because he can create at will. But below this point, he's doubted his ability to invent and create, and he begins to save. And savingness is the common denominator, along with succumb, all the way down from 4.0. The more reserve you are holding, the more you are trying to gear yourself up, you know, in case you do have to make an effort, the more you spare yourself, you know, saying, now we'll have to get a good rest. They'll have to say, well, eat well now, because we might not get a good ration for several hours. The more we say, well, I'm saving myself, you know, for the girl. I'm saving myself for the man. This, by the way, is the anatomy of impotence. All you have to do is start to restrain something. Restrict it, and of course you've got a game. But when it comes down to where you're saving mass, or saving energy, or saving space, intending to use it later, you can't even play a game. So you'd say that actually, really probably from about 3.0 down, it ceases to look like a game, and it starts to look very serious, and the fellow has forgotten he's playing a game, and that is the biggest trick life can do. It forgets it's playing a game and goes right on playing a game. All right, this is all very well, this chart as we go up the line here, but there's another aspect to it. This is a great oddity. This is really, to some degree, a chart of awareness. A vertical chart of awareness. But how would one come upscale on any one of these subjects? How would we come upscale on any one of these? Well, there's an interesting thing he could do. He could break each one of these points from the condensing scale and break loose into a knowingness about that point with the greatest of ease by using a side scale over here. Now, this side scale would be from any one of these points, you see. It could just be from any one of these points. We have no reason to draw it in here for each one of these points. This thing has become too cluttered. But each one of these points could have a side scale as how aware is he that he is owning something? How aware is he that he's owning something? See, that's another thing, and that would be a right angle scale. And the solution to the thing evidently lies in this philosophic machinery. Philosophic machines are very interesting things, by the way. Did you ever hear of the Egyptian tarot? That is a philosophic machine. There are many of these philosophic machines. The Germans are particularly fond of making them up. And the only reason I go on making them up is trying to make the point clear. That is not the goal of the German philosophic machine. If you've ever had to study Kant and so forth, the philosophic machinery which is constructed is generally, evidently, in the direction of obfuscation. And the German, I don't know, we used to have a time up along the Rhine there. We used to go up from Southern Europe into the Rhine and attack the thing and so forth. And I finally got the disease from the Germans, so I'm making these schemes too. Anyway, here we have no. Now,
that would be a very limited sort of know, wouldn't it, if you only knew about this? But actually, if you could know enough about ownership,
you would then go up here to an ultimate know.
This is what's known as a discontinuous function. It was pointed out to me last time at Staff Auditors Conference. A couple of auditors said, "Now that's enough out of you," they said to the auditor that brought that up. But I think that is the correct mathematical name for it, discontinuous function. Here we have something which is further and further awareness. You see, we have awareness is up here, but then we have awareness about what going over here, so we would actually plot our awareness this way. It's very simple. Let's then look down here, and we'd have look. And we'd come down here, and we would have emote. And then we would come down here a little bit further, and we would have effort. And then a little closer into the scale, and we would have thinkingness. You know, that's worry, worry, figure, figure. And in here, closer, yet on this scale, we would have symbols. Owning a car actually is an interesting point on the tone scale. It's right there. A symbol has mass, meaning, and mobility. Anything that covers, that covers. That's identity, identification, solid masses, meaningless in masses, things that can move around. All right, we come down a little bit further than this, and we have eating. Now we come a little further down than this, and we have sex. And we come down a little bit further than this, and we have moved in on actually the 00 point. Mystery. Now, you notice those scales coming in here, starting at the right and running over here to this, and we could come up here and we draw the same thing. This would be no, look, emote. Now, if you'll notice something odd here on this one, we're talking about emote about emoting. Interesting thing. Fella gets very upset because other people become angry. So we've got a whole emotional band here on the subject of anger. And so we get apathy about anger. We get people making huge efforts to prevent people from being angry, either hitting them or pulling away from them or doing something. We have people using sex to keep people from being angry too. In other words, control handling of anger and reaction to anger. Well, this is just a scale of reaction and awareness. So we have over here, again, we have effort. And in here, of course, we have thinking. And then in here a little closer, we have eating. And in here we have sex. And again, in here we'd have mystery. Why he gets angry is a mystery to me. This is an interesting thing, isn't it? Now, that looks like a horrible scramble there, but it really isn't. Because this is a discontinuous function over here, and we'd go on up here to know. There'd be an unlimited knowingness, just there'd be an unlimited survivingness on the subject of, in this particular case, anger. There would be a similar scale for hiding. Now, the fellow who really knows he is hiding, and from what, and wouldn't even have to look to find out if he were hiding, he would have no emotion about the discovery, but could have any emotion about it. I wouldn't have any make any effort at all to keep from hiding or to go on hiding. This person would be in terrific condition. He'd be top scale on the subject of hiding, but hiding is bottom scale. All right, as we plot this up along the line, we look this over, we discover that we could place almost any pre-clear. But more important than that, we could place any process. There's a little law about processing. Processing has to undercut the position of the pre-clear, the dramatizing position of the pre-clear, a little bit in order to bring the pre-clear into a cognition. This person is hiding. This is a difficult one. He is hiding. We'd have to undercut his position a little bit to solve his hidingness.
Now, fortunately, hidingness has two bands. There's hiding from and hiding. All we would have to do in this particular case would be to process another object than himself and move it afield. He could understand that somebody else was hiding, but he might not know he was hiding. You see? So, to remove it from him, we would have to go further from his zone of mystery. We'd get some kind of a setup like this. He'd know somebody else was hiding, but he wouldn't know he was. All right, here we would have the tone scale then going from minus 8 down here, which is hide. So you see, there's other things below hide. Just haven't found what they are yet. And here, let's say, is 40.0. And here is the 0.0 point. And here, these are key points on this tone scale. Here's 2.0. Here's 4.0. Now, we know already that anywhere from 2.0 is succumb. The succumb vectors are going to so strenuously outweigh the survival vectors that the individual's final result in almost any sphere will be succumb. Now, the 4.0 down to 2.0 is very salvageable. We can change his mind with ease. It becomes more and more difficult to change his mind from 2.0 down. All right, now we have a crossbar here, which would go at various levels, any level of it. There'd just be an enormous number of these crossbars, as many crossbars here going to the right and left as there would be points on the vertical scale. We take this horizontal scale, and we discover something very odd about it. Well, this is your no mystery. What's this? This is your minus inverted scale. This is your plus inverted scale. And this is a discontinuous function to zero. Now, that's a highly theoretical thing, just how you would get to know about an inverted knowingness. It would be very difficult. But that is the difficulty which a Thetan faces. He's always trying to know about some inverted knowingness. Well, he goes over here to this inversion. Now, we get inversion, then, on any one of these points. There's an inversion on mystery, but what's the use of inverting mystery because it's already inverted? Well, there's a mechanical action which goes along with this. The fellow's caught in the theta trap, and then he becomes the trap. The first mystery on the plus scale would be simply, well, I know I'm in a trap, but it's sure a funny thing how I got here. Then I know I am a trap. It's a funny thing how that Thetan got in there. Many people do this with a body. They say, well, here I have a perfectly good body sitting here with this crummy spirit crawling around inside. Same inversion. All right. A person who is inverted on sex, minus sex, would be in an interesting state. This person would react negatively, sexually, on any other point here. As he came out here, if he were at here, you would have a bad mystery about sex, you see, or something of this sort. It would just be bad. Everything would be bad about sex. See, there are no advantages on the minus side of the scale, which are anything recognizable to you as advantages. Sex is bad. The way to handle sex would be in some completely inverted method. The way to handle effort is to let somebody else do it. In other words, you've got a bunch of wrongnesses over on this thing, and it's bad, but at the same time, you've got a bad on the scale vertical here, and you've got a bad over here on negative. No reason for me to go into inversions, particularly. If you don't know what inversion is, we'll find some individual who apparently knows everything, but he got it all out of a secondhand something or other that he has now no cognition of. See, he doesn't know anything because he has never recognized anything. A signpost is about the same sort of thing. It will tell you the distance to Paris is 42 kilometers. And you would say then the signpost knows something. The signpost doesn't know anything. Well, that's the kind of condition knowingness would be over here on this side. But you will see these inverted things. Now, these various things can be additive to this. Now, let's say that this point here is responsibility. You'd have already a negative responsibility towards sex. We don't want any responsibility. There's no responsibility whatsoever. I was just lying there and it happened. Now, a little bit higher on this thing, control. Is the car suddenly jumped off the road? Cornell University has entered upon $1 million or $8 million or something dollar program to study accidents. And they're taking them from the instant the accident has occurred and studying the mechanics of the vehicle from there on. They wrote us a letter when we queried them, and they actually stated that this was their study. They wanted to find out what happened to the tires and the brakes and so forth. And we wrote them and asked them, what are you doing with the driver? You know, the driver responsibility and so forth in the accident. And they said they weren't doing anything about that. And we wrote back and asked them if anybody in the country was doing anything about it. And now we're waiting for their letter, which will say no. All right. This gives us a checkerboard here, actually, which could tell us where Preclear was stuck. He'd not only be stuck on the vertical scale someplace, but he would be stuck on some subject in relationship to the vertical scale. Stuck on a subject in relationship to the vertical scale. He would have no responsibility for eating. It's everybody else's responsibility for eating. And this would tell you where he was on this vertical scale. You see, you could read it then. He'd be over here on a negative scale, eating, right there. And he'd be at this level of responsibility. His main worry is about responsibility and responsibilities. You know, I wasn't guilty. I am not to blame. This sort of thing. So he must be on the negative scale. Or he is saying, people should be more responsible. Look at all this trash around here, see? And we know right where he is at that moment. Now, there's a big difference. The first and foremost thing you should know about, I will tell you last, about the tone scale. And that is, individuals change all over the scale all the time, if they're sane. Almost nobody in Dianetics or Scientology has ever learned that well enough. A person who is sane is mobile and volatile on the tone scale. When he gets mad, he gets over it. When he's scared, he gets unscared. Dianetics and Scientology do not proof a person against the tone scale, but make it possible for him to have some control, some action, ability, and experience in relationship to it. The thing which happens on the tone scale would be demonstrated here in a third dimension, which would be the degree the individual is stuck at any one point. And when we're talking about a 2.0 down, we're not talking about somebody who got mad the other day. This does not make him 1.5. We're talking about somebody who is mad all the time, or who occasionally comes up from 1.1 to anger. We're talking about a fixed condition. When we're talking about aberration, we're talking about an inability to change the environment. We're talking about an inability to act or react. And that in itself is aberration, is no time, and is all that is wrong with the tone scale. All these things are more or less parts of a game. It's an interesting game, but you become much less expert in a game that you have no control over or understanding of. If this tone scale has increased your understanding of the mind or of life, why, I'm very glad. If it has not, then it has failed. Thank you very much.